coming to you from the frozen tundra deep inside the basement of champions.
Canada!
The Dean Somerset Podcast.
Woohoo! Beer!
Let's go!
And now, the man who puts the FU in functional training. Here he is, Dean Somerset.
All right. Good evening, everyone. It's Dean Somerset here with the Dean Somerset Podcast. Today, I'm joined with a very good friend of mine. We go back a number of years. It's Jonathan Goodman of the Personal Trainer Development Center, the PTDC.com. John and I have known each other for a couple of years where he pretty much cold called me out of the blue and said, hey, do you want to write for my site for free? And being young and very immature on the writing thing, I said, yeah, sure, I'll do that. But since then, he's helped to be one of the biggest promoters of the work that I do and been able to help me to achieve the kind of success in my business that allows me to do the kind of things I'm doing, like teaching workshops and having bigger exposure. So John's been a huge influence to me, but he's also been a huge influence to probably dozens, if not thousands, of other trainers with the work that he's done on the Personal Trainer Development Center. So John, thanks for being here. Say hi to everyone.
Yeah, dude, I'm happy to be here. And you know, one of the things that I strive to do early on in the PTDC was be kind of like a talent scout, where I would recognize people who are just really smart and hardworking and basically all the good attributes that you could ever have, and helping them even a little bit and making them think that I had even the littlest bit to do with their success as they moved forward. So I'm glad to know that my plan worked a little bit.
Not a problem, man. I mean, you do good work with the stuff that you do online, the fact that you're trying to help raise the game of training all over the place. We got to work on your reservation making skills when it comes to big groups and Brazilian steakhouses, but you know, that's an old story for an inside joke that I'll tell people at one point in time if they haven't already heard it. Big thing to go through. I mean, you've done a great job of building essentially an educational empire for trainers all over the world, but you come from pretty humble beginnings in that. So tell me a little bit about how you got started in going through being a personal trainer, but then also getting into the online venture of things. How did that actually come about?
It's a good question. I mean, hindsight's 20/20. I'll try to relay the story as accurately as I can, but understand that there's obviously some mistakes in my story because memory is fleeting. So I was, like you said, I was a trainer in Toronto and basically an affluent neighborhood. And I had a degree in kinesiology, and I had been training about 3.5-4 years and realized that I needed to do something else to make money when I wasn't training, like a lot of trainers kind of reach that point. And for some reason, after a very long story, I decided to write a book for trainers, and that book ended up being something called Ignite the Fire, which is became wildly successful. But I started to write that book when I was 24 years old, really out of ignorance. And that's like the first main lessons that I glean from my past is you need a healthy dose of ignorance in order to do anything really special. Like if I knew what it would take to write a book, if I knew the gumption that it would take to actually like put out a book at 24 or 25 years old to educate an industry, like who the heck was I to do that? But I was so ignorant that I just knew so little about what else was out there that I went ahead and did it. So that was like 24, 25 years old, working in Toronto, didn't really know anybody. And then, you know, you were some of the first people that I reached out to, I think, Dean, and just started to reach out to people who I thought were doing good work in the industry. And really, I don't even remember what my outreach to you was. It was basically like, hey, dude, I think that your work is good and I'd like to copy it onto my site.
Something like that. I think you asked me to write like one or two articles for you for free, just for the exposure, because you had no money at the time. And since then you've been able to offer a little bit of payment, which is good. But even then it was just more like, yeah, you have a great premise behind your website, so I'm happy to help out.
Yeah, like I was able to create something that other people kind of cared about. You know, this idea of kind of bringing the best collection of resources together online, which was the PTDC. And that helped promote the book. I mean, there were no intentions early on. I wish there was like a master plan. There were no intentions early on of like stopping training or anything like that. My only intention was creating a little bit of extra income, because I knew that at one point I would want to have a family, and I knew that what I was doing the long days was not conducive to a really good family life. And so at about 24 or 25 years old is when I started, I guess, making a move to kind of free up time. You know, I say now kind of make a little bit more and a little bit less time with a bit better schedule. That was always the plan. And the fact that it turned into what it is now, I would have never known in a million years. Like, I didn't even know what a blog was. I mean, I had no idea what I was doing. But I understood a basic principle, which is kind of, if you can support as many people as possible, you're always going to win. And so I just went out and tried to find as many good people as possible and created a platform to support them without having any idea of what that platform was going to turn into.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, you always had to go through some big milestone moments in order to get where you are right now. Like obviously you were a trainer full time and then you were writing on the side. And then you went to a point where you were probably training less in person while spending more time doing the online work and then eventually finally giving up the training end of things. So walk us through the process that you went through for those kind of big milestone steps. And what were your thoughts when you went from being like a full-time trainer to doing the online element full-time, traveling the world and creating new products to help the industry?
It's going to be a long story, but I will tell you something, Dean, that's special to the Dean Somerset podcast. I've never told you this before. I don't think I've ever told anybody. I still have a screenshot of the first ever affiliate sale that I ever made. And it was for Dean Somerset's Post Rehab Essentials.
Yes. One.
And I still have that screenshot. You know, you save like your first dollar made and you, so I screenshot like major events.
Yeah.
And that was the first ever affiliate sale. Now I'd sold some books up until that point, but one of the first things that I realized with the PTDC was I didn't really know what I wanted to sell, but I knew that I had seen other things that other people had kind of sold online and in that industry, and I thought pretty early on that most of it was crap. Mm-hmm. If not that it was crap to the information, it just wasn't thoughtfully put together.
Mm-hmm.
They hadn't understood the problem that their audience had well enough, and they didn't actually package their product well enough. So I had Ignite the Fire, but it wasn't making a ton of money at that time. And I decided to float the site, as I call it, almost like stage one with affiliate sales. Find really good products by other people, promote it, and you get a percentage in return. This is the basic premise. And so the first affiliate sale that I ever made was yours, Dean. And that was a major milestone because that was the first moment that I realized that the audience that I was building was valuable in and of itself.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a major lesson for me. That was sort of the first bit of comfort that I had that I could wait to figure out what it was to produce.
Mm-hmm.
That was going to be really special and not rush into it because I was able to make enough money basically to fund the site and to fund, because I mean, you know, sites are cheap to build and run and there's a huge time commitment as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of the first major milestone was Dean Somerset's Post Rehab Essentials version one. The first ClickBank check that I got from that was pretty cool. And I never told you that.
Yeah, so probably like all of $30 or something like that when it finally came through, right?
But 30 American dollars, so that's like a million for us Canadians.
Mm-hmm.
So that was stage one. Stage two was Ignite the Fire started to do really well, reasonably early. You know, I had built the PTDC site out. I started in March. The book came out in like September, October.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd been building a bit of an audience and I'd building some relationships with people. And because I put the book into print, a lot of people passed it on. You know, digital products and stuff don't really get passed on, don't market for you in ways that print does.
Mm-hmm.
So it started to do really well. It started to get accepted. It got picked up by a couple colleges pretty early on, which was surprising. And now, I mean, it's being translated to Chinese now. It's in a version two. It's used in colleges and mentorships around the world. I mean, that book has actually ended up being a pretty valuable in terms of financial success and also personal fulfillment. It's been great.
Mm-hmm.
But what happened in terms of client hours, I mean, I was training 40 to 45 client hours one-on-one a week at that time. Once the site started to make a little bit of money, I cut it down to 25, then down to 15, and the 15 hours were very strict. It was, I can't even remember the days. I think it was like Monday, Wednesday, and Saturday that I was working, and I blocked off the other time to work on the site. Eventually, about a year and a half after I started the PTDC, I stepped away from training full time. It was very much grudgingly, but I'd always made a promise to myself where I said, if I ever feel like somebody else could do a better job than me with my clients, then it was my responsibility to hand it off to them. And I was there with my clients and I was thinking about the site and I knew that wasn't fair to them. And I was fortunate to be in a position where I worked with amazing trainers that I was perfectly comfortable passing my clients off to. So the transition was pretty easy
mm-hmm.
that way. And you know, there's the ego thing, right? Like nobody can do as good of a job as me, but like they didn't miss a beat. Yeah. They're fine.
But that had to be tough for you.
Still working actually with the same trainer.
That had to be tough for you to make that decision and say, you know, I'm going to go from something that's somewhat secure and comfortable, knowing these people have worked with me for a while and knowing that they're probably going to be working with me for a long time if I want, to something that's almost absolutely not guaranteed and somewhat risky going into that venture. So did you have to kind of wrestle or struggle with that at all when you made that decision?
I did. I mean, first of all, I bawled my eyes out. Like, I'm man enough to admit that I cried the night that I made that decision, but I knew that it was the right decision. It was... I realized something then, and it's something that I've really taken to heart now, is as the stakes get higher and higher and higher with my business, is a deep understanding of what fear is and how fear stops us. And fear is not a rational response to a stimuli. Fear is nothing but a worry of the unknown. And so if you can make the unknown known, then the fear mostly dissipates. So I think it was Seneca, and I'll paraphrase his quote, but he says, if you wish to stave off all fear, assume that the worst can happen will definitely happen. And what I did back then is I said, what is the absolute worst case scenario here? You know, like, I'm going to make this decision. I'm going to stop training. I'm going to basically cut off my main source of income at the seams. I have a little bit of money coming in from the site, but not enough to live and feed the site. But if I want to really grow, what I need to jump on, what's the worst thing that can happen? And I knew that I had savings, and I also knew that I was making a bit of money with it. So, like, absolute worst case scenario is I don't make any money in 5 or 6 months, and I have to go back to training. Like, that's not that bad of a worst case scenario. So it made that leap much easier. You know, I was young. I didn't have dependents and stuff. But that's kind of what I always do now when I'm looking at ventures. I mean, I've started, like, you've seen it. How many things have I started and shut down over the years? Often at pretty large losses financially.
Yeah.
So it's kind of always what do I want to get out of this thing, and what's the worst that can possibly happen in order for me to make this decision that I think is the best to move forward. And that really helped with the stepping away from clients. The worst case scenario was actually not that bad. And it was worth it because I looked at other people kind of doing similar things to me, blogging online, starting websites online, whatever. And very few of them had actually stepped away from training full time. And as a result, and I watched them, they just kind of stagnated, you know, like they leveled off, like they had some success. But in order to get to that next level, you've got to really commit yourself to it. And most of them hadn't done that. And I knew that I had to do that. Since then, I mean, things have just grown and grown and grown. Like, I mean, you mentioned it before. I've spent the last 5 years now, basically 6 months living away from Canada, 6 months in Canada. So I'm in Toronto in the summers and spent my winters in Hawaii, Thailand, Uruguay, wherever. Costa Rica, and now Thailand again this year.
Yeah.
So it's been great from an experiential point of view. It's been great from being able to spend really quality time with Allison. And from a business standpoint, it's great too because I can escape the world and think much more clearly than if I was deep in the trenches in a big metropolitan city.
Yeah. We'll touch on your travel bug a little bit later, but a big question I wanted to ask is, do you think that you picked the right time to step away from full-time training and doing full-time online stuff, or do you think you should have done it sooner or later? Like, looking back on it, hindsight's always 20/20, what would you say to yourself if you were to say to that person who was getting ready to make that transition, wait a little bit, jump the gun, or now is the time to do it? What do you think?
I think I probably did it pretty well in terms of timing. I mean, I had been growing the website for about a year and a half. Like, I was busting my butt. I mean, I was working in the gym from 6:30 or 7 in the morning until about 9:30 at night, going home at night, getting home at about 9:45 and working on the website till 2 in the morning, writing an article, whatever it was. I did that for about a year, year and a half, where I wasn't making much money from it. I just kind of have, like, for some reason, I kept doing it. I don't really know why. But I had enough of an understanding of what went on, and I had some theories about what I needed to do. I think what the mistake that a lot of people make is they almost, like, you always hear, like, hustle, dive in, follow your dreams, all this kind of stuff. But if you don't really know what it is that you want to do, you might dive in doing the wrong thing or doing something that isn't quite right for you. So I think the timing was pretty good. I knew – I didn't know what I wanted to sell yet, but the vision was to build a collaborative platform that curates the best information from trainers on the planet. And I knew that if I'm able to build an audience and a platform, I could figure out how to make money later without too much trouble. And so that was always the vision. But that only came about after basically plugging away, trying a whole bunch of different things, throwing a whole bunch of stuff at the wall for like a year and a half.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of writers who will say, you know, you don't write when you're inspired, you write to become inspired. So it's more like you have to put in the time, you have to put in the effort, you have to put in the work in order to get to the point where you can say, this is the direction I want to go. You have to kind of throw your spear at a whole bunch of different fish before you can figure out the one that's actually going to work, right? So, I mean, the fact that you were plugging away and working at it, that was like almost practice to figure out what you actually wanted to do.
And to understand your thoughts. I mean, I teach to learn.
Mm-hmm.
I like to learn.
Yeah.
And not everybody's like that, but I know that I'm not alone in that sentiment. In that if I really want to understand something that I'm thinking about, I sit down with a notebook and I write about it.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, now it makes sense. And when you have to write about something in a way that you expect other people to understand, this is something that Luke Shuler really cleared up for me in one of our conversations years back. He said, any writer who tells you that the process of writing is easy is a terrible writer because you don't write the way that you think. If you're writing to make other people understand, you have to approach that topic from a much more lateral view, from a much more full view. Right? If you're teaching somebody something, you have to look at it from their viewpoint, knowing nothing about it. And as a result, it forces you to examine the subject in a totally different way than you ever would yourself. And I think that that's made me really understand myself a lot more, my own philosophies of both how to train, but also like how I want to live, which obviously there's a lot of parallel between training and living. I mean, Dan John is, the philosopher who you got to go to for that, but
the philosopher king of the fitness industry.
Pretty much. Yeah, I mean, Never Let Go was so paramount to me finally making that connection. Never Let Go, and then Murakami, who's one of my favorite writers, Haruki Murakami's Japanese writer, What I Think About When I Think About Running, was a book that he wrote about. He's a fascinating writer. I actually finished one of his novels yesterday in fiction, but he's written some nonfiction, and this one was about why running long distance is so important to his writing process and his thinking process. And Malcolm Gladwell actually is very similar in that regard.
Mm-hmm. Fun times, yeah. I mean, you have to have that moment where it's almost you shut off the conscious brain and allow the subconscious to kick it around a lot.
Yeah.
Speaking of that, I'm sure you wound up with a whole bunch of different mental blocks when you're coming up to ideas of what you wanted to do. I mean, some of the things you put out there in terms of writing a book, if you had no experience with that, you had to kind of jump the gun to be able to say, I'm going to write this book. But then also things like your new certification that you came out with, the online training certification, you had, I'm guessing, no real experience in coaching clients online prior to writing that kind of a manual, correct? So you had to... Yeah, so you had to obviously come through a mental block and being able to say, you know, I haven't done this before, but I want to show other people how to do it. And there's obviously going to be a little bit of pushback on something like that, because if you don't have that experience or you can't show the success, how did you actually overcome some of those own personal mental blocks and be able to put yourself into situations to actually succeed in those subject areas that you might not have been that well versed in?
That's a really good question. I'll tell you the process of the online training, the story of the online training really quickly, because I think that that will... I think that that will illustrate, and this is the same with a couple of things that I've done. About 4 years ago now, it was 2013, is when I basically said, okay, I think I know the biggest problem that trainers have, right? Because the first step whenever trying to produce a solution, especially a solution that people are going to pay for, is you need to have a very fundamental view and a very detailed view of what the problem is. You need to really nail that down. And so the problem that I reached is every trainer that basically passes the 1 or 2 year point as a trainer and has had some success reaches a point where they need to make a little bit more money in a little bit less time with a bit better schedule. We did a ton of surveys. We collected hundreds of thousands of data points of our audience. I did it two separate times. I opened myself up for 15-minute phone calls for anybody who wanted to, and I did 60 one time and 80 the next time. So I did 140 phone calls with different trainers around the world for 15 minutes. Where they could just talk to me about whatever problem they were having, and in addition to surveys and stuff like that. And what I found was a couple of things. Number one, most trainers don't really care about making like the six-figure trainer, like that dream. Most really good trainers just, like I said, need to make a little bit more money, right? Like they need to not work early morning to late night. They need to have a bit more control over their schedules. And they need to make enough to support family. And so now that I had a really clear view of the problem, I had to go and find a solution. This was back in 2013. Online training didn't really exist. But one of the survey responses, and I always highlight it when I'm giving talks, I think it was number 66 or 166, I can't remember. One of the survey responses actually said that he wanted to learn about online training. And that was the first time I ever even thought about it. But I kind of started to think more and more, and I was like, online training is actually the perfect solution for this. And not necessarily as full-time online training, but as part-time online training. So then the next step was to say, okay, how the heck do you do online training? Because there wasn't any resources out there at the time of how to do it. So I sat down and I mapped out, based off of everything that I knew about marketing, about business, about training, I sat down and I mapped out a business plan of how to do online training. Everything from taking care of clients to structuring your business to marketing to getting clients and stuff like that. This was back in 2013, and then I took in 2 dozen for a beta group to go through this. We took in 2 dozen. They went through it for a few months. They sent back feedback. This worked, this didn't work, whatever it was. I made the changes, and then I turned that into a program that I called 1K Extra. This came out late 2013. Some people might remember that. 1K Extra was bought by about 420, 430 people right away. So now we had a group of 420 people who had version one of this program. We took in a ton of feedback from them, right? Then I put that out in version 2, then we iterated on version 2, then I put it out in version 3, then I iterated on version 3. All in all, we've had now a few thousand people who had gone through the various versions of 1K Extra in the course of 3 years and took in feedback at every point, basically what worked, what didn't work. And also I was able to make connections with just thousands of online trainers in different parts of the world doing it. Some who had taken my courses, some who didn't. And what that now has turned into is the Online Trainer Academy. And that's been the process of building it up, because with online training specifically, there's no manual, or there wasn't a manual for how to do it. There's no precedent, right? There's nobody out there who was teaching it well beforehand. There was some scattered information online here and there. Most of it, to be honest, was written by me. In order to put together this program, I mean, there's over 50 other coaches involved in it that contributed information. What I did for the final bit of it to write the textbook and to put together the teachings of it and the certification was I took all the information we had from the various 1K Extra stuff, again, took what worked, took what didn't work, and then did just tons of interviews and research and pulled out just kind of the golden nuggets. I was able to say, okay, you're picking up clients like Lazarus Ross is a good example of this. He runs a company called Major Gains Fitness. There's, I think, 8 trainers working for him now. He comes from a multi-level marketing background. And say whatever you want about multi-level marketing, what they do in terms of organic Facebook outreach and marketing is brilliant. You can take what they do and you can basically pull the parts out of it that really work for you, throw the parts away that don't, and sell something that you might agree with if you don't agree with whatever they're selling. Mm-hmm. So I was able to get on the phone with him and deconstruct what he did and then reconstruct it and actually improve on it a little bit. And I sent it back to him and improved on the system a little bit and basically said, hey, here's actually 4 psychological studies that back up why what you're doing is so smart. Because everybody who was doing online training up until this point really had kind of patched it together and had done what they were doing based off of their experience and continually improving it. So I was able to really pull that out of each person, again, deconstruct it and then make sense of it, reconstruct it and put it out for the Online Trainer Academy. And we put out version 1 in September, October, took in just under 1,000 students, 987 I think it was, for the certification, and shut it down. Have taken 5 months, took in a bunch of feedback, did revisions, and now it's in version 1.01, and improving it constantly, and that's just been the process.
Nice. I mean, it's obviously really cool to see that you've been putting that much time and effort into something, and it's not just you pontificating at the top of a phone or a soapbox and saying, "Oh, here's what I think should happen." When do you think I started doing online training?
I would have guessed that you've been doing it for a long time. Because you were blogging before I even knew what a blog was. Like, I was late to the game too. Websites on the internet. Mm-hmm. Like, I didn't know that they were blogs. I remember Brett Contreras' old crappy website when he was still doing the Weeds of the Week.
Yeah.
You know, way back when, before he basically passed it off to like Ben Bruno, and then I stole it from Ben. And your blog was around there too.
Yeah.
So that would have been like, oh God, that could have been like 2009, 2010. I mean, that was, it seems like forever. It's not that long ago, but it's, that's forever on the internet.
It's an Obama ago. That's how long it is.
It's an Obama ago. That's right. It was before there was a black president.
Yeah.
How long ago was it? What's your answer?
2011 was when I had my first paid online client.
So how did that come about? Tell me that story.
Somebody was reading my blog. I didn't even have a coaching button on my page, and they reached out and said, I want to train with you. How do I pay you to train me? So I had literally zero.
How did you do it?
Well, I just sent him a PayPal link and said, okay, well, here you go and pay me. And I set it up so that I would send out invoices at the first of every month to all of my online clients, and then I would wait for them to pay it, which is a terrible system to use. But then I would just use like a Word document and YouTube videos and send them the workouts. So I would just outline it and put it together that way and then give unlimited feedback and interaction to be able to get them to have the best coaching experience possible. And since then, I've systematized it and worked with exercise.com, and they seem to be doing pretty well. In 6 years, I've worked with over 300 clients. So pretty happy with that.
Exercise.com is a fantastic platform, mm-hmm. especially if you do similar, what you're doing, almost like groups that you're bringing through online training.
Mm-hmm.
Exercise.com is the best for that by far, actually.
Yeah, I've got...
Give some props to them in the textbook.
Yeah, I've got two different streams going. I've got my one-on-one coaching, but then I also have group coaching set up with them. So it seems to work really well. I don't get paid for that, but hey, cool. If they want to kick me some money, I'm happy for that.
I want to know who's in charge of buying the domains for that company, because they've got weightlifting.com and exercise.com.
Well, they had weightlifting before they shifted everything over to exercise, and I think they were waiting to get exercise.com. Once they finally got the domain name for that, they shifted everything over. So if you type in...
But they still own both.
Yeah, they still. But if you type in like weighttraining.com, it reroutes you to exercise.com.
Oh yeah, weighttraining.com, not weightlifting.
Yeah.
But like, those domains have got to be worth hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Probably. I mean, you figure like a simple one like exercise has to have a huge keyword search in it. I mean, if anyone has no idea about like Google search or GoDaddy terms or anything like that, they're probably just thinking we're complete nerds right now, but it's actually a business underneath the businesses.
Oh, it's huge. It's become less of a business. I'll tell you a funny story of a friend of a friend of mine. This is how all good stories work, right? A friend of a friend of mine told me this thing. So when Canada came out with its, and this is a story told to me, I mean, I assume it's true, but when Canada came out with all its domains, so like the .ca domains,
mm-hmm.
they made a rule in that you could only buy a domain if it aligns with your company name, because they saw what happened in the US and other places. They didn't want people just buying up every single good domain overnight. And so what one guy did is he went out and registered 80 corporations that day, and then turned around, and the corporation was like Shave Corporation, Investment Corporation. And so then he turned around and bought investment.ca, shave.ca, yada, 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 and never worked again a day in his life.
Smart way to go. So he pretty much gamed the system that they were trying to prevent from happening and made it work for
him. Exactly. Completely gamed it. Because those domains often aren't sold, right? They're just rented. Like,
yeah, you just park on it.
Will pay X amount of dollars a year to shave.com to redirect to them. Or,
yeah, you just park on the site and just kind of wait for your check to roll in.
Oh, it's nonsense, yeah. Anyway, I always thought that was such a funny story of, and you know, you have countries like Tuvalu, which is the .tv, where their largest export is their domains.
Yeah.
It's just a funny, weird world.
Yeah, I got
into back to fitness.
Well, I got into a discussion with a very well-known trainer, I won't mention his name here, who had a problem with the way that I used the term core training in one of my products. He didn't think that the core was actually existing, and he kept on saying, you know, it's a trunk. So, you know, I just screen captured coretraining.com. What would be the price of purchasing that domain name? And it was in like the thousands of dollars. And then I typed in trunktraining.com, and it was like $2. I could buy that domain. And I said, in terms of what people are looking for, no one's looking for trunk training. People are looking for core training. So if you want to have eyes on the prize, you got to get people's eyes on your prize. That's all it comes down to, right?
Love that point. I talk about that. I mean, I've talked about that in the PTDC over and over again, and I talk about that a lot actually in the textbook and in the certification.
Mm-hmm.
You have to meet people where they're at.
Yeah.
Right. And one of the most important things when you're establishing your ideal customer, I think with online training, you need to have a much tighter grip on who your ideal client is. Mm-hmm. For a lot of reasons, from a marketing standpoint, absolutely. But from a training standpoint, too, you can't be reactive in your approach. Right? If you can't sit there beside them and they say that something hurts and then you turn around and fix it, you have to proactively anticipate stuff going wrong and program that in. And so you need to know your client inside and out. And one of the main things, one of the main aspects that I hit on that is from a marketing standpoint, you've got to meet them where they're at. You've got to use the terminology that they use, because only then will you be given an opportunity to educate them later. So whether you like the term metabolic or functional or whatever, the reality of it is that's what people are looking for. Mm-hmm. And so if you want to have a chance to, and the terms are specific to your audience, right? If you want like science geeks as your clientele, then maybe you won't use those terms. Mm-hmm. Maybe you use more jargon or whatever it is, but if you want an opportunity to actually educate somebody and if you want an opportunity to say to somebody, you know, metabolic kind of needs to be thrown in the proverbial elephant graveyard. Like that term kind of means nothing. Mm-hmm. The same with functional, like it kind of means nothing. The idea behind it's there, but it's kind of been abused.
Yeah.
You still need to use that in order to attract.
Yeah.
And then once you attract the person and have built up a bit of trust with them, only then can you begin to, I guess, educate and empower.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't matter what you believe or think is correct if nobody cares what you believe or think is correct. They have to be able to, it has to resonate with them. I mean, if I'm trying to reach the thousands of people who have no experience working in a gym, how do I reach them by using exact terminology that they have no idea what it means? I mean, that's like trying to explain what an internal combustion engine means to somebody who has no idea what a car looks like. It doesn't happen, right? So you got to, like you said, meet them where they're at and use the terminology that they're comfortable with, and then expand on that terminology and expand on their thought process rather than just beating them over the head with terms that they have no idea about.
I still remember a workout I did years back with a friend of mine who was a training partner for years. He was a pilot. He's now an air traffic controller, but he was a pilot. And he was, I mean, the guy was in better shape than I was. He'd been working out for years. And he was just a member of the gym, but we just started becoming training partners. And we were doing a workout. I don't even remember what it was. It was something like some hypertrophy jogging or something that we were doing. And I just looked at him and I was like, you don't know what this is? Like, how do you not know what this is? And he just turned around to me, stopped what he was doing. He's like, what's the average takeoff speed of a Boeing 747? And that just stopped me in my tracks. You know, for him, that was so obvious, fundamental of what you know as a pilot. And for me, what I was asking him was so obvious, fundamental of what I know, but because I'm so in my circle, I was like, well, everybody knows this, of course, but like, why would you? And it was the same with him. You know, like everybody he speaks to, every single pilot in the world, that's just kind of not common knowledge, I guess. That's always stuck with me, that conversation, is how deep we get into our little circles. And you know, everybody's like, well, online training is so saturated. Everybody's an online trainer. It's like, well, no. Like, if you're in networks of online trainers, it seems like everybody's an online trainer. But walk down the street and stop 10 people and ask each of those 10 people if they know what online training is.
Yeah.
And one of them might tell you that they kind of know it exists.
Yeah.
So you just need to, from a marketing standpoint, get out of your network. And all of a sudden, the world's your oyster. It hasn't even been close to discover yet. Mm-hmm. You know, like, don't promote yourself in a fitness group with other trainers. Are you a musician? Join a group for musicians and become the health expert in it.
Mm-hmm.
Find magazines for musicians. Every single network in the world, every single interest in the world has a health expert, right?
Yeah.
You just need to find those industry publications and stuff like that and become that health expert. And all of a sudden, now you don't have a shred of competition.
Mm-hmm.
You just got to get yourself out of your own head.
You got to be the go-to guy for the people who need to go to you. So that's a really cool component on that. Now, you've obviously done a huge amount of work, especially while traveling the world. I mean, you just railed off a few places that you've been to. I mean, I don't even know how many air miles you have on a given day or week or month or anything like that, but there's got to be up there, especially with some of the long-haul flights you do to the other side of the world. Why is it so important to you to do this kind of traveling, and what do you get out of it versus, you know, setting up roots in a place like, I know you said you lived in Toronto and you still do in the summers. What would be the difference between setting up roots in somewhere like Toronto consistently versus traveling the world? What do you get out of that?
Sure. There's two components to it for me. One is minimizing to maximize, is what I call it. I basically don't own anything. I guess, I don't know if this is going on YouTube too, but like I'm wearing a black V-neck right now. It's from a company that my friend started called Unbound. It's Marina Wold, beautiful black V-neck. I bought a bunch of shirts. This is basically the only shirt that I own. I don't own a car. I don't own any property. I basically don't own anything other than like my computer and stuff like that, obviously, that I travel around with. And the reason for that is I've been able to grow my business as quick as I have. I've been able to experience things and think through problems a lot more clearly because I have so few other decisions that I need to make over the course of a day. When I get back to Toronto, I rent a car for 6 months and I rent a condo for 6 months. If something goes wrong with the car or the condo, I hand back the keys and I say, fix it. When I leave, I hand back the keys and I say goodbye. It's the same when we're here. I rent a motorbike and I rent a place. The ability to do that to me, and so I kind of work that into a lot of things that I do, with clothing is another one. I minimize the amount of decisions, I minimize the amount of outside distractions so that I can focus on the people and the things that really matter to me. And some of them are small, seemingly insignificant, like what clothes to wear, and some of them are large, like I don't want to worry about my car breaking down. Even if it costs me more money to rent a car, like I rented a motorbike for 2 months for more than the cost if I were to buy a motorbike. Like I rented it for 11,000 baht, I could have bought one for 8,000 baht is the Thai currency. But if I bought one, I would have had to be in charge if there were any maintenance that were needed. And then I would have had to figure out how to sell it afterwards. In renting it, in the great scheme of things, it's a negligible difference in terms of money. And if something goes wrong with it or it needs an oil change or whatever it is, I just give it back to the guy and he gives me a new one. The ability to have that for me, and that's step one of kind of how I've decided to live my life, has allowed me to produce as much as I've produced. I mean, in the last 4 years, I've written 3 good books, 6 if you count the not good books. I've put on 4 conferences. I can't even remember the amount of like total products and stuff I've put out, but 6 or 7 products and a certification. And now I have a team to help me, but that really only happened in the last year. Like it was basically me and only me figuring out every single aspect of it and then hiring experts. So like hiring editors and designers and stuff like that along the way. There's no way in heck I would have been able to do that if I had all of these other things, right? And I'm young and I was able to do it at the time. The other aspect is the travel, and I've done a ton of travel. It's really changed my mindset. I truly believe that if you want to be different, if you want to do different, you need to see different and experience different. You need to see things that other people don't, to do things and to think in ways that other people won't. I like to look at myself in the fitness industry as not somebody who's in it, but I always envision like the end of the first Men in Black, you know, where you see like the 2 aliens like playing around with the worlds. I always kind of look at myself as that. I'm like, I want to be the guy who's kind of on the outside looking in. Because if you're, picture it this way as a metaphor, if you're right up against a tree, you can only see the bark. If you take 10 steps back, you can see maybe a couple trees. If you climb up the hill that overlooks the valley that the tree's in, you can see the path around the tree. And if you're always staring right at the bug, you can't do that. And so in escaping the world, basically, I'm able to see kind of the industry that I'm in and see the opportunities that lie in ways that I think I wouldn't have otherwise been able to. And I really escaped the world. Like I lived Ignite the Fire version 2 and the Personal Trainer Pocketbook. I launched those books from an off-the-grid eco home in a small remote town in Uruguay with no internet. I had to travel to a bar to use internet. I didn't hold my own book until my brother brought me a copy of it when he came and visited in Brazil a month and a half after. I sold over 10,000 copies of my books before I held a copy of it in my own hand.
Wow.
That's pretty wild.
Yeah.
Like when you think about it. And just to be able to like see things and meet people, like every time I'm away, like I met a German guy who follows my stuff here on the island in Thailand. We've done road trips across Scotland, England, We did two separate road trips where we hiked in 18 different national parks in Canada and the United States. Like, it just, the amount of experiences that we've had, and I say we, Allison and I, has just opened up my mind a lot more. And it's been invaluable. And then on a personal level, it's allowed a much deeper connection to Allison, who's been with me the last 4 years. And we spent, I mean, every minute basically with each other traveling around to these places, gaining the experiences as a couple that we wouldn't have had otherwise. So it's been invaluable. If I really wanted to grow the business and blow it up, I would have moved to New York City 5 years ago. And I would have done that, and I probably would have had investment into the business, and it would have been worth tens of millions of dollars, if not more by now, or already been bought out by somebody. But that wasn't the life and the impact that I wanted to have. I wanted to create a brand that lasted for me. I wanted to put out a body of work that I was truly proud of. And I feel like I've done that, and I really take a lot of pride in the body of work that I've put out so far, and I can't wait to get up in the morning to continue to produce what I consider to be just really neat, special, different things.
Absolutely. I mean, I heard a quote a while ago that you can't necessarily judge people in, I guess you could say, necessarily derogatory terms if you have a lot of stamps on your passport. If you've been to a lot of different places and you've met with a lot of different people of different walks of life and been able to see who they are and what they're going through, it's really hard to judge against subsets of the population in any way, shape, or form if you have at least seen them and walked in their shoes in one way or another. You've obviously done a lot of really cool things as far as travel and experience, but you got a bit of a life event coming up in the next couple of months. A little Bambino on the way, a little mini Goodman possibly coming
it's
through,
gonna be,
right?
Yeah, it's going to be a little mini Goodman coming around somewhere around March, yeah. That's man,
gonna,
we can't wait.
It's going to be micro.
I mean, when I started this whole journey back when I was 24, 25, my main priority was, I mean, I'm the youngest of four children. And my dad worked his butt off. I mean, my family was reasonably well off. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, we didn't suffer. I mean, I'm not somebody who's been through. I was on another podcast where they asked me about, like, battling through adversity. And I kind of said I have too much respect for people who have battled real adversity to claim that I've battled through any adversity. But I saw how hard my dad worked. He traveled a lot. He worked a lot of long hours. And I knew that he wanted to spend a lot more time with us. And I kind of made a promise to myself, like, if I can do anything so that by the time I'm 35, if I can be in a financially and personal free enough position to be with my children as much as I want to be and as much as they want me to be without any other limitation, I'm going to do everything that I can. And that was when the whole thing started. I mean, that was like 24, 25 years old. I mean, I was single. I didn't have a girlfriend or anything at the time. But I knew that at one point I really wanted to have a family and probably a big family, which Allison is happy about, but we'll see what happens when we have the first one.
She's got to do most of the work on that end, right?
Yeah. And look, I mean, I'm 31 and the reality of it is I'm fortunate in that I can pick and choose the hours that I work and financially we're perfectly fine. So I'll be able to walk my kid to school every day. And I'll be able to pick my kid up from school every day. Like, that's all that I ever worked my butt off so hard for. Those nights when I was working until 2 in the morning, knowing I had to be up at 6 o'clock again to train all day. Like, that was what was going through my mind. And it's I'm just super, super happy that somehow it worked out. And it worked out, like, years earlier than I thought that it would. It's I mean, I'm like chewing up a little bit talking about this right now because it's I'm just so excited about it.
There you go, man. Do you think that you'll still be able to travel and do the experiences that you're able to do right now, or do you see yourself kind of staying more of a homebody in one location?
Don't know.
Yeah.
I think we'll absolutely be able to travel. The question is whether we will want to as much as we have. Mm-hmm. We came to Thailand this year because we knew that we kind of didn't want to be as far away, at least for a couple years, from Toronto. Last year we went to Costa Rica for 5 months. We fell in love with it. And so we kind of have thought that Costa Rica might be like a 6 month home. You know, it's on the same time zone or an hour apart from Toronto. It's a direct 5-hour flight from Toronto. It's a really easy trip.
Nice.
They've got great schools there. They've got a Montessori school and a Waldorf school in the town that we were in. So we can absolutely do it. It's just a matter of whether we want to or not. Mm-hmm. And we won't know, to be honest. You know, we're not making any decisions. Either way is perfectly fine.
Cool. Well, I think I've taken up enough of your time and Wi-Fi on this. So if anyone's interested in learning more about you, if they don't already know, how can they get a hold of you? What kind of things should they be looking for in order to find out more about who John Goodman is?
I mean, the best thing to do is the Personal Trainer Development Center if you're a fitness professional. It's the PTDC.com, like you said, or just search Personal Trainer Development Center. You'll find everything there. I mean, we've got, I don't even know how many articles now, 350 articles curated, professionally edited from trainers around the world on every single topic imaginable. Mm-hmm. Pertaining to training. Like, it's funny that anytime anybody asks any question about training, I'm like, you know, the South Park episode, it's like, Simpsons did it. I'm like, PTDC did it.
Yeah.
I just kind of throw them the article. So that's the best place. You can find anything there. If you're interested in online training, I mean, there's an online training category. There's tons of articles from me, and you can learn more about the Academy too there as well.
Sounds good, man. Well, hopefully you enjoy living in the bamboo hut that you're currently in. It looks like it's a cozy place, and don't know what you have planned for the rest of the day, but hopefully it's going to involve like workouts and writing and doing all that funky stuff, right?
It's going to involve picking up Allison's mom actually at the pier, because her mom's coming to stay with us for 3 weeks.
Nice. All about that experience,
so, as
right?
As long as she gets in okay, then...
as long as there's an airport to land at, right?
Well, there's an airport to land at, but we haven't heard from her yet. She's, of course, has like a 27-hour trip. Like, to get here, she's going Toronto to Singapore to Bangkok to Koh Samui, so 4 flights, and then a boat from Koh Samui to Copenhagen.
Wow.
So it's a bit of a trip to get here.
Definitely off the grid.
But
I'm guessing you're having fun with it, though. All right, man, I'll let you go for the day, and I'll put this online for you, and we'll be able to get you working.
Sounds good, dude. Appreciate it.
All right. And...